If you are looking for even more help and guidance on your breakup, I have a few different options for you to take your healing to the next level. I have 4 different online courses depending on what stage of the breakup that you're in, from beginning all the way into moving on after heartbreak. Or you can bundle all of my courses together and use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. I also have my 30-day no contact challenge to help hold you accountable in going no contact with your ex. And we have our free Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with other people going through breakups all over the world. To learn more about any of these resources, head to the show notes where you can learn more about my courses, take the quiz to figure out which course is best for you, or join the Facebook group. And don't forget to use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. Welcome to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast with your host, Breakup Bestie, aka me, Kendra. Breakups are hard, but you don't have to do it alone. Each week, I will be taking you through a different topic as it relates to breaking up, healing from heartbreak, growing in your single life, dating, and getting back into happier and healthier relationships. The goal of this show is to provide support, hope, tips, and to remind you that above all, this too shall pass. Welcome back to another expert episode of the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. I have Drew Ramsey, MD, on the show today. He is a board-certified psychiatrist, psychotherapist, and author. His new book is out today, Healing the Modern Brain, and it talks about 9 tenets to build mental fitness and revitalize your mind. And we link all of this stuff to breakups. He talks about what happens in the brain and body when you're going through something like a breakup. We talk about how the mental fitness that you can build as you're navigating a breakup will not only pay off for healing, but also pay off so much in the future. We talk about the role of nutrition, movement, grounding in nature, self-awareness, engaging with activities that you enjoy, making connections with other people. And he shares really tangible tools on how to do that and why it's so important. And really, I'd say the message of this episode is adding more tools into your toolbox to help you get over your breakup, which is really the message of our whole podcast, the whole show. But I really like how we talk about this really holistic, integrative approach with Drew and how it can help make you feel better, which is, I know, what everyone is listening to this show to do. So highly encourage you to go out and get Drew's new book, Healing the Modern Brain. And the link is in the show notes. And please enjoy the episode. Welcome, Drew, to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. It is such an honor to have you on and to talk about the brain.
Oh, Kendra, such a treat to be here. Hey, everybody. I'm excited to heal some heartbreak. I'm a therapist. And so at heart, as much as I'm kind of in the brain food and mental fitness space, so it's a treat to be with you all.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I would love to just start off by kind of hearing your inspiration for your newest book, Healing the Modern Brain. And I would love to hear what your take is. Like, in your opinion, what is the modern brain? Obviously, like, we've gone through so much in what, the past 30 years, that's changed how our brain reacts to things. And so I would just love to hear the inspiration behind the book.
One of the big pieces of inspiration was, just as a psychiatrist who's been doing this for about 20 years, I've seen a lot of things change. And I've gotten worried that people are maybe focused on some of the wrong things now. There's a lot in front of us that the new science of mental health tells us we can do to improve our mental fitness and our brain health. So I kind of wanted to get the word out there. I find, you know, a lot of times people are still like arguing about serotonin, or they're talking about inflammation like it's, I don't know, new, but not related to their mental health. Or they're doing a lot of changes and experimentation because of longevity, but they're not really thinking about the most important aspect of our health, which is our mental health. And so that's definitely one of the places that inspired the book, is I wanted to share more of the new science and more of what I see makes a difference in my practice that we all agree on. You know, I call it the modern brain because also there's a little bit of maybe a warning in here. I just think we haven't been doing mental health right in a certain way. And I think most of my colleagues would agree. We tend to meet people late. We meet people when they're already patients. And I've wondered, and I think everyone has for a long time, what happens when we do more to understand and use new science to better prevent and better treat mental health disorders. It just looks a lot different than the mental health care system we have now. It maybe requires a little more investment of time, energy, money. However, along with all that treatment, there just seems to be more we all need to do in the modern world, right? No one else, no psychiatry kind of movement or mental health movement in the past has ever had to deal with like cell phones, like, you know, porn, alcohol, all of the gummies. Oh my gosh, there's like so many different types of gummies now. So
yeah.
And I think as everybody knows in this community, right, when it comes to relationships, dating, breaking up, getting back together, forming a deep, intimate bond, really something that, you know, everyone I meet is really driven to do, to connect. And when it happens, oh my gosh, just it feels really good. It's also very hard to recover from. I'm certainly one of these people. If I had not found a long-term partner, would be listening to every episode of this because I'd be in constant heartbreak. So I'm glad to be here with you all because it's a good example of where we don't often think that, hey, you're in a new environment. You know, you're recovering from heartbreak differently than any group of people has in history, where there's just more around, for example, the disruption in how we form self-esteem, or what I call the cost of optionality, right? Where, you know, I'm old now, I'm in my 50s, but there was a way that part of working through things in a relationship was part of, you know, it was kind of like part of a relationship. Now with more optionality, I think it's just more challenging. So I think that's an example of, again, where the modern world has shifted something. And so I try to go through what I really see are these core tenets of how we build mental fitness, each of which has this, you know, kind of way that the modern world has disrupted it, whether it's nutritionally or with movement or with nature or sleep or with connection. So I think that's a long-winded answer of where the book came from. I'm a psychiatrist and I just love the idea of a set of principles or values or just having a more of a framework around your mental fitness. And for some people listening, like, what does that do for you? Like, what happens if, you know, I'm kind of cheering for folks like, yeah, like make more connection, like get more engaged. Like, can that help people in their mental fitness goals and mental health journey? So
I think frameworks are, I mean, especially in this day and age where you can log on to social media for all of 20 minutes and literally get like 10 different things that you should be doing. And you're like, oh my God, should I start sleeping with mouth tape? Like, okay, now I need mouth tape. Now I need to do this. I should get a, not to say they're not good things, but it can be so overwhelming to just, and some, I could see how it's easy for people to just be like, this is way too much. Like, I'm just going to opt out of everything and keep doing what I was doing. So I love the idea of framework. And I love the term mental fitness too, because it shows like it's something that you're continuously working on and it's something that you can build up to and it'll pay off in times when you are going through something like a breakup.
I think so, because it creates structures around you. I mean, and I think you're speaking to a part of what we need in mental health, which is right now is framed as like, you know, kind of too little, I think. I wouldn't say too late, because I get to meet lots of people in crisis and I like crisis work and it's really informs the book and informs all of my work. But I see people get better in a variety of ways. And it's really inspiring to be a psychiatrist. Sometimes people think it's like a really, I don't know, it's really a hard job, but you just get reminded of how creative people are, how strong the human spirit is, mm-hmm. how surprising people can be. And when they kind of turn a corner, that's where a lot of these tenets come from. It's really inspiration from my practice. I think there are a lot of people, as you know, you kind of get online and there are a lot of people, even people with credentials. I think it's important to get a ground your health advice with people who see patients, because it's, I don't know, it's where the rubber hits the road and you get really humbled very quickly in mental health, because you see that not all recommendations work for everybody. I have saved people's lives with medications. I've also seen people have horrible side effects. And so it's important to curate your feed and understand mm-hmm. who's in there because they've either paid to be in there or because, you know, you kind of linger a little too long on the sensationalistic stuff. I tend to do that sometimes. But yeah, it's important to kind of cut through all that noise. And especially right now, that's healing the modern brain. It's kind of like, hey, kind of wake up.
Yeah.
We're doing a lot of weird and wacky things for our health and our mental health. There's a lot of really misinformed opinions right now. And that's super dangerous. Like, there's nothing worse for healing from a breakup, then you don't treat your anxiety according to some sense of evidence. Right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that like CBT and SSRIs and, you know, all the various treatments work for everyone. But boy, if you've never tried any of the evidence-based treatments and you have, let's say, severe social phobia, you know, you can, someone can understand how it's like, that's really going to be in the way of healing. And so my hope is that we heed this notion that the brain is different. We never had microplastics in our brain before. Nobody really knows what that does. Nobody's like, it's doing good stuff unless it's getting me ready for the implant, which is, I was thinking, like, more plastic, maybe the implant like settles down in there. Who knows? Maybe. Right. But, you know, no one's dealt with the screen and the kind of the algorithm based screen interests.
Yeah.
Just based on who you are, but then beginning to based on how long you just, you know, the microseconds of how long you pause, how long you watch and are distracted, and all of that kind of going in to curate probably not the best of our impulses in terms of what's shown to us. So again, these are just new challenges. Or as I go over in Healing the Modern Brain, it's a fact-based book, everybody. I want you to really hear the evidence of what we're up against, not in a fear-mongering way, but it's just important to see. 70% of your calories, if you're the average American, come from ultra-processed foods. Or 80% of jobs are sedentary going forward.
Yeah.
Wow. It's like, okay, well, then you just back that into the mental health statistics of what the ultra processed foods and a sedentary lifestyle and poor sleep and all the other stuff, like, what does that do for our mental health risk? And it drives it way up. And so all these tenets are really interventions. I think the basics, a lot of people aren't going to be surprised about. I think some of the brain science, like what happens when you're not sleeping enough, I think that will be surprising. And I also hope some of the parts of the modern psychology of the book, we're talking about things like social isolation and how that drives inflammation, or talking about some of the importance of things like engagement and how when we get more passive, less engaged, less active, it changes our brain. And so I hope that will excite people and really kind of back up these actionables.
No, that's incredible. And I want to definitely get into the 9 tenets that you talk about in the book, but I would love if we could start by talking about what is happening in our bodies, our brains, our bodies, when someone is going through something so jolting as, let's say, a breakup that they did not see coming. Like, what's going on?
Blindsided breakup out of nowhere. Yeah, I've been with a lot of people through these, and it's so hard because, so first of all, on a psychological level, there's a questioning of your reality testing. And this is so hard for all of us because it's such a big part of a relationship, right? You go to dinner and you're like, what do you think about how this chicken is? And someone's, oh, that's delicious. Like, yeah, no, I thought so too, right? It just sort of helps us as we're checking in about our perspective on things. I'm feeling really upset. What do you think happened? You know, if you're in a good relationship partner, it's, oh man, you know what happened. And they help you understand and process what's around you. So when you're blindsided, when you don't see it coming, there's a sense that your partner, the person you trust the most, had a secret. Right. Mm-hmm. And then also your perspective of reality, like, yeah, my relationship's pretty secure. We're having a few bumps. You didn't see this coming. So I think first there's, and maybe to apply the tenets, first is the tenet of self-awareness. Is there a pattern in your life of things that kind of unexpectedly happening with you in relationships? And so there may be some signs or signals that, you know, sometimes we're just not aware of. You know, mm-hmm. And we learn a lot in our relationships in terms of how we behave. It's really one of the kind of best places to learn self-awareness for sure, because we can have a good relationship is a bit of a mirror where we bump into some of our behavior. And so, you know, on that, again, that psychological level, there's a notion that reality testing was a little bit off, that your trust, it's so hard for all of us to trust and be vulnerable and dependent, right? All that stuff is super hard. And it's been ripped from you. So it's a part that's, again, invokes a lot of feelings of being the victim, for sure, because you have been victimized in a way if someone has like pulled something away from you. And then I think it activates a lot of what's akin to withdrawal. Right? When people are in withdrawal of any substance or anything that's like very pleasurable and dopaminergic, you seek it, you do it, it feels good. When that's pulled from you, it's just devastating. In relationships, especially intimate relationships where there's physical contact and hanky-panky and sex and all that stuff, it's really those first, as everyone listening knows, I don't mean to be traumatizing, everybody's like, so awful. It's like everybody here knows it's all. But there's a real biology behind it, right? When you think about, okay, all that bonding is a bunch of oxytocin. That's our bonding chemical. That stuff feels great. So suddenly just the basics of like, hey, you went from getting that every night or regularly to now not at all with the special person. And it's not the kind of thing where, oh, you just drop another person in there and it feels great. You know, no, it's like you're really, it's like a withdrawal, but there's only one thing that makes it better. And that's where you see so many people kind of having a hard time with the boundary when they break up or continuing to kind of meet up and hook up. It's almost a little bit like tapering. Right? If we do, someone stops drinking, we don't say just like stop. We got to taper them because they go into withdrawal, and the withdrawal is very physical. There's also just one of your kind of special favorite pieces of your life is now missing. And so that causes a lot of symptoms of depression where people get hopeless, they isolate. It really attacks self-esteem, especially for women, especially if there was some contention in the relationship or if there are mean things that were said. You know, a lot of times with the breakup, there's that like couple of things that got said and really stick with people and hurt. So those are some of the things happening in the brain for sure, you know, and in kind of the mind is, you know, as we sit and often ruminate. It's also where a lot of the self-care is important. You know, it's easy to stay up late. It's easy to lean into the insomnia. It's easy to lose structure. And, you know, some people get really inspired post-breakup. They work out more, eat better. They like get inspired. But, you know, others of us just wallow and kind of sink into a lot of carbohydrates. And I always remind people also, like, I think that should be okay for a couple of days or like a sad Saturday if you're not feeling it. I just had maybe not the most productive weekend. And my wife reminded me, is like, yeah, you were kind of like also resting because it's been really intense. So, you know, I think it's important, especially important, that mindset in a breakup that feelings don't last forever. So we don't need to be as scared of them. That's been really important for me in like my own path of when I'm feeling sad, not to be like, time to do a project, time to perk up. It's like, no, sometimes things are sad. Sometimes you hear about hard things. Sometimes we're in a weird spot with ourselves. Sometimes things like being blindsided by a breakup happened to us, and like it involved real grief and real sadness. So those are some of the things. You know, as you can hear, I think about it in terms like the brain, almost like addiction and withdrawal. I think about it in terms of grief and the nonlinear notion of when things are taken from us, how that grief is it like, now on day 50, I feel better. It's like, you know, sometimes on day 50, you feel awful and just can't stop thinking about the person. But, you know, knowing those triggers, building in structures, building in space, getting better impulse control, you know, all like tools that are very important, as everybody listening knows.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's, I mean, so many parallels with, you know, withdrawal addiction. And that's where my background comes from. I've been sober for 12 years now, and so many parallels that I experienced between going through getting sober and going through breakup. And so I love to hear, you know, kind of more of the science behind that. And you mentioned in the beginning, and I'm curious, you said something about like how self-esteem, sources of self-esteem have changed. I think maybe I misquoted you, but something along those lines. Can you talk a little bit about that, like the self-esteem aspect? Because I know that's something not only are people really struggling with, but they're really hoping through the process of healing from a breakup, they're going to get that back.
Yep. Sources of self-esteem, some of them are the same and simple, right? We accomplish things, we feel better, we decide to go on that run and we do it, we feel good. We commit to get a degree or focus on a career and we accomplish those things, it feels good. So, you know, some things are the same. I think I was referring to some of the digital nature of relationships. Mm. You know, so how, for example, communication fits into your self-esteem, you know, whether somebody texts back or not, you know, that's like, that goes into a lot of our self-esteems, right? But a lot of times that's just not very intentional, or people don't see, or it has great meaning. You know, all of these things happen, but that kind of thing is new. I also think the way that appearance filters AI, chatbots, fembots, boybots, all the bots, I think that that's also shifted self-esteem. I've had some really, I would say, good, you know, frank conversations with some of the AI tools about my inner world. I don't know what to think. Some of the advice is quite helpful. And just putting it down sometimes is helpful. Is that better than my journal? I don't know. So, or like my self-esteem as a psychiatrist and therapist, you know, everybody listening in a little while, would you rather talk to like, you know, the AI version of me on Zoom? Just like kind of looks like me, sounds like me, but just, boy, he's read all all of the internet about this and really knows. I feel like right now people want me, the human, Drew Ramsey, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think here pretty soon, like maybe some aspects of what I do even could get replaced. Maybe not. So what do I do with my self-esteem as I'm thinking about the, you know, next 20 years of my career? Should I feel confident, Kendra? You know, should I feel like, yeah, or not? Is that just foolish? And I should like get into that, you know, learn AI in 30 days course they keep selling me on Instagram. It's like, poor, it's like old dads. It's like confused about AI. Come on, dad. So,
yeah, that totally makes sense. I actually had a moment. I was up at like 3 a.m. with my twin boys and just so down. And I went on ChatGPT and I asked for like basically comfort from being up in the middle of the night. And it wrote the nicest thing. I like screenshotted it to save it to read it later. I do still have a real life therapist and a real life psychiatrist, but I was like, oh, okay, this is 3 a.m. I can't get a hold of my psychiatrist. This is a good tool.
Yeah, well, that's a great example. And so I've been sharing my treatment room here with Dr. Google, my colleague, for over a decade now. And I've been very appreciative of all she brings to the office. You know, I'm not one of the docs that gets defensive because patients are learning more than ever about their conditions. And it's really, I think, kind of fun, really collaborative work. So then the chatbots came in and now, you know, there's ChatGPT or Claude or Llama, right? I was getting lots of interaction happening in my practice between patients with AI. And yeah, it's really, as you know, sometimes it's really useful.
Yeah, but I think probably not helpful in a world where we do need more companionship engagement. And so let's get into the 9 tenets that you talk about. You talked about self-awareness, but maybe moving into some of the other ones and maybe more specifically, like how they can help someone who is navigating a separation.
Yeah, I want to get right into the ones that I think are so important. We talked about self-awareness, and I do think that's one of the most important, right? Because it gives you a timeline and it gives us grace and kindness with the self, right? If like, let's say my wife left me tomorrow and I was blindsided, I'm going to give myself, I don't know, that's going to take a long time, right? And just so seeing the timeline of how long that would take and kind of being aware of where you are in that process to not expect too much or too little of yourself. Mm. So I think self-awareness really plays attention, not to go back to that, but just it plays an important role. I like the journaling. I like journaling out the pain a lot. I find processes where the emotion flows. I wouldn't avoid that. For me, like when I go and I see art show here at our Teton Arts Center, like I like always cry. Or there's a candlelit yoga class that my wife takes me to. Like the first 10 minutes are always waterworks for me. It's like a little embarrassing, but I think something good's happening there. And so again, if there's something, maybe it's everything, maybe they have too many tears if you're early in a breakup, but things that kind of allow you to have a valve where you let it out a little bit. I find early journaling for me that's good. So that's some self-awareness. We've talked about therapy and psychiatry, also sometimes very helpful. Groups also sometimes really helpful. Some of the other tenets, I think, are some of the usual suspects of lifestyle medicine. I just try to go at them a little differently, like exercise. You know, the IRS. So we have, you know, 58 million Americans are struggling with the diagnosed mental health concerns. And in Healing the Modern Brain, I kind of say, and everyone else. I say everybody is up against this thing of building, crafting, honing, optimizing, struggling with their mental health. That's just how it is. And so what can we do to build it? What can we do to kind of make it stronger? So thinking about movement, exercise more as movement. Mm-hmm. And whether you're walking, whether you're dancing, whether you're riding horses, like check, check, check. You get, those are great for your mental fitness. I do those probably more than I do like lift weights and build muscle. And even though I, you know, I think the data about muscle is interesting, I'm just not sure that's where our focus should be, you know, entirely 100% of it.
Yeah.
Protein, more muscle, more pain, more gain. And in the book, I really argue this culture kind of takes us away from the mental health effects. And I share some of the data. Like I thought it was really cool. There's this meta-analysis that looks at all the different types of exercise. And the one that really makes the biggest difference for our mood, you'd think there'd be like headlines everywhere, dancing.
Oh.
Like if you like sign people up for a structured dance class.
Yeah.
And so this study came out long after I learned this. One of my patients I had no idea. She's a tango dancer. I had no idea about this. She came in one of the patients, like, I really learned this lesson because somebody, you know, every time is like, you know, what about that exercise? You've been thinking about it, like gym, like, you know, how about lifting? How about Zumba? How about, you know, just really kind of pushing it and getting nowhere and getting, you know, I think where people often get when physicians are pushing things like that, a little annoyed. And this patient came in glowing, just radiating one day. And she'd just come from a dance class. I had no idea. She's a tango dancer. Just not anything you'd expect or guess. Just wonderful lesson for me. And so then this meta-analysis comes out looking at all these different types of movement, and dancing comes out on top. And so all movement is great for your mental health, your brain health, your cardiovascular system. But you know, when you think about, boy, you know, usually got a big grin on our face. We're sometimes with people, although I'm all for the, you know, like shake it on out at your own personal dance party. And so I hope to approach movement kind of like I did with nutritional psychiatry and food, right? Where, hey, there's a set of foods, if you're just relax and just eat what's served to you and kind of buy stuff you see on the TV. And as you're driving through town, you're going to end up eating the modern American diet, which is really devoid of some of the most important nutrients for our mental health, right? When you think about things like zinc, magnesium, folate, look at the dietary insufficiency rates. Uh-huh. 75% of people don't eat the recommended daily need of folate. Everybody in medicine and healthcare knows that if you don't have enough folate, you have clinical depression. B12, magnesium, zinc, vitamin E, like all these nutrients that are super important for the brain, very highly correlated with depression if you don't get enough of them. And we see that just ultra-processed food isn't doing it for us. It's also kind of wild, Kendra, that, you know, as much as like we know magnesium's important, we all love it, the debate is like, so glycinate versus sulfate.
Yeah. I got on like the magnesium glycinate side of TikTok for a couple weeks, and I was like, do I need, it's like right. All of a sudden now you're like, do I need this?
Yes. It's like, I find fascinating is we don't have a favorite magnesium food. People don't know their top zinc choice. Take something like potassium, other than banana, give me one. Because if white beans don't just bam, pop into your mind, like can't wait to get some more of those for all the potassium, which they didn't for me. It just shows how we have such we're being taken advantage of because we have such a limited knowledge. It's actually why my last book, Eat to Beat Depression and Anxiety, I could, part of writing it is I wanted to make a set of drawings so I could just like remember visually.
Yeah.
Beans and greens, like good for magnesium. You know, things like this, like potassium. Those are my white beans, bananas. Think about omega-3 fats. Like what besides wild salmon? Oh, sardines, anchovies, even rainbow trout. And so just knowing where these nutrients come from, orienting them towards mental health. And so that's a little bit what's more in the book of the tendons. How does that revolve around a breakup? It's like, because when you're sitting on the floor with the big tub of ice cream, I'm sitting, first of all, get mint chip and coffee for me. Okay. Cause I'll be there with you. You know, yeah. Like I eat a lot of ice cream when I'm up. So I stopped drinking too. And like my family has been like, maybe you should start drinking again. It's a lot of ice cream, a lot of kombucha, like a lot of sugar. So, you know, I think it's important to recognize, again, the self-awareness, the pattern you're in. Is it a lot of sugar? Is it a lot of processed food? Are you hating self-care? I find this often when I'm down, depressed, dejected, et cetera. You know, I don't want to do any of this shit that's good for me.
Mm-hmm.
No way.
Yeah.
Like, especially if I've been rejected. It's like, you know, I kind of want to make that like, yeah, no, it's true. Of course I get rejected. I'm not going to care for myself. And so I think if you see yourself like leaning into those health unhealthy patterns, you got to see it and be honest about, you know, is that what you would do? Is that how you would care for anyone in your life? Is that the advice you would give anyone in your life? And if the answer is no, 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 you just, you know, you sit with that for a minute and then you shift. You deserve better. And so I think one is not being too hard on ourselves nutritionally, right? That two is having healthier comfort foods. You know, if it's like late at night, I got a late night order last night for my teen. So I took some prosciutto and I put it in this little cupcake tin. I put a couple eggs in there to get her some more protein and a little, she likes this olive tamponade, a little olive tamponade, swirl it around there, put a little cheese on top, put it in the oven. So this little eggy bite, high protein, you know, simple, right? Very satiating, really rich. Can't eat it too fast. Have that with lots of water. So thinking about, again, what your comfort foods are and how to get more what we call nutrient density.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, other tenets are breakup. The other ones, so just to sort of, that's how I approach some of those lifestyle medicine ones that are like,
yeah.
And it's like, how does this affect your brain function? How do we think differently about what you should eat based on that? How do we think differently about how to, you know, get more movement in your life? I would say a couple of places that I think are really good in the break, a couple of the tenets that I really try and push in my practice. I get, you know, I meet a lot of people post breakup or in the midst of a breakup or about to be in a breakup. And one of my patients just flashed into my head. I need to check in on him. He had a little breakup a few months ago. So there's a few things that I think work and are important. One is you get a real up close personal view around the tenet of connection. So we know there's a huge isolation epidemic. We also all know when you're in a relationship, it's sometimes harder to keep your friendships and your other relationships as active. It's just natural. You kind of got this person, especially first year or two, you're really kind of focused on them and the relationship and it working out. And it takes a lot of your energy and focus and it's very stimulating and exciting. So, you know, you see people, some people are really great about this. You know, they carve out time for the friends. They make sure that doesn't happen. Others of us get a little head over heels and lose sight of that. So in the book, I talk about creating a web of connection to kind of move it outside of just like friends and lovers, right? And to think, okay, what are the other kind of connections that create the web of connection in your life? What are the institutions? Who are the mentors? You know, who are those people, those friends that you can check in once a year? Or who are some people, like I reached out to a couple of folks, gosh, probably 15 years ago, I was their supervisor and they were residents and they're really interesting docs. And so a couple of those relationships I've tried to reach out and kind of warm up is I really enjoyed these relationships with people like maybe 10, 15 years younger than I am as I'm getting older. So it's an example of kind of looking at my web and being like, huh, this has been really great. I wonder how these people are. I think it's on me to reach out. I want to kind of strengthen this connection. So I went to this great residential high school in Indiana. Indiana has this like awesome, gifted and talented high school at Ball State University called the Indiana Academy for Science, Mathematics, and Humanities. And this was just a game-changing institution for me, like game-changing. I'm still in touch with almost most people in our class. I mean, it's really active. It's like all of the geeks and freaks and nerds. And I mean, it was just this wild. We were the first class. I was on a call with our director and it was almost like more than like 30 years ago for me. But boy, I get like warm, fuzzy feelings when I think about them because that institution completely changed my life. And so I'm probably at a stage in my life where, you know, kind of honoring, thinking about being involved with some of these institutions, really important. But, you know, I think, again, one of those things people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, maybe sometimes miss. Like, hey,
yeah, you
know, like go to alumni weekend, stay in touch, like write into your alumni magazine. And so I think connection is huge. And then that connection of like, how are you going to get out and about and not just have it be like dates? Can you be out in a community? Like the one I love here, I'm in this really awesome town now, Jackson, Wyoming, which is just like, there's like so much community here. It's almost intimidating. It's like everything here. It's like super intense. Like people do all these incredible athletic feats together. You go to the rock climbing gym, it's like 60 people and they're all like incredibly healthy people, you can tell. And so it's really fun though, a really fun community to be in because there are just so many opportunities to connect. So many, whether you want to go trail running or mountain biking or learn to snowboard or ski. And so it's, again, thinking about how to connect and how to have things in your life that aren't necessarily about like dating and friendship, but are also connections around like maybe learning skills, like taking a pottery class or a cooking class. So I really like the tenet of connection for this community.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes in addition to your breakup overwhelm? If you're a woman, you're definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now. In our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. And these hormone disruptors are on top of the natural hormone changes we go through. And even though it is a natural process, it doesn't mean it doesn't wreak havoc on us. The good news is you don't have to suffer through it anymore. Thanks to Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth, a formula made with only herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal changes in women of all ages. I love that Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. And here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. That's why Hormone Harmony is perfect for women of all ages who are struggling with life-disrupting symptoms such as PMS symptoms, menopause symptoms, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, and occasional bloating and gas. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code HEARTBREAK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEARTBREAK for 15% off today. Did you know we spend a third of our lives in bed? It's a lot of time when you think about it, so I believe it's important to love your bed. And with March being Sleep Awareness Month, it's a great time to check out Avocado Green Mattress. I know as you're navigating your breakup, especially if it's new, you may become hyper aware of your bed, thinking about how it used to be yours and your ex's bed or one that you shared a lot of time in together. I remember after my last breakup, my bed was one of the first things I wanted to switch out. Avocado is not only crafted with certified organic latex, wool, and cotton, ensuring a safe, healthy sleep environment free from harmful chemicals and toxins, but they also have unmatched comfort and support for all sleep preferences. I need a soft mattress, and Avocado has everywhere from plush to extra firm depending on your needs. And Avocado is committed to sustainability. Their mattresses are made from organic, eco-friendly materials that are good for both you and the planet. Head to avocadomattress.com today and save up to 10% on certified organic mattresses. Dream of better.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
I was just going to add real quick, I love that, the connection phase. And something that I've been trying to practice recently is if I think about someone, usually it takes like 2 or 3 times, but if I think about someone, I just send them a message and I just say like, hey, I just thinking about you. We may be like friends from high school or anything like that. Or I saw this and I thought about you. And it doesn't have to, I'm not like, let's catch up. Because I think sometimes that can be intimidating to be like, start this huge new thing when really it's like just putting these little feelers out. And some of them have led to, hey, let's get on a call or like, let's get together or something like that.
Oh, I love this point, Kendra. This is such an, I don't mean to cut you off, such an important, because I think this is also one, it's like, what do I mean by the modern brain? It's like, I mean this, where it used to be like, hey, Josh. I had this friend, Josh, who I stopped like 5 years ago, but I always just like pick up the phone and call. And he'd be like, dude, you're the randomest person. You just call.
Yeah.
Like, hey, let's just call. People don't do that anymore. And also, you want to get to this, like, we have like schedule anxiety where it's like, I would reach out, but I'm not going to reach out because if I reached out, it'd be like, well, let's take this to the next level and like meet. It's like, whoa. I don't have any time in my schedule for that. I don't mean like that. So, but I love this notion, especially if you're in a situation, you've broken up, it's really hard to reach out. Because people are like, how are you? And it's like, oh, my heart's broken. I'm crushed. I'm
terrible.
A lot, terrible, single, despo. It's like, ugh. And so that said, it's really important. I always remind people, you know, one of the things that help is being of service, listening, helping. And when we're in that spot, our heart is broken, you know, we don't feel like we can be helpful or of service to anybody. That's tough because we're then doing all the talking and not doing much listening. And it's just a harder spot to be in as a human.
Yeah. But also like remembering, I try to tell people this too. You could be of service just by calling someone and asking how they're doing or asking. Sometimes I know when I'm so self-obsessed with what's going on in my brain and I ask someone how they're doing and I just hear about their day. To me, it's very liberating to just hear about someone else's day and people appreciate it. Like people love, I've learned that with connections too. When I have social anxiety, the number one thing I just do is just ask people questions about themselves. People love to talk about themselves. And
I'm a therapist. You're saying one that it's like soothing, calming, and interesting to listen to other people. I mean, that's definitely one of my favorite things about my job is that ability to kind of really be interested and focused on someone else. I think it's really, just a wonderful kind of side effect of the work. Yeah, but I think it's also, you know, all these tenets are tough when you're post-breakup. you know, sometimes people are wondering, like, how do I know where my mental fitness is? And there's this assumption when you post breakup, it's bad. I have a mental fitness quiz up on my website, which just kind of gives people a basic sense. You know, I also really encourage people, again, that tenet of self-awareness. The start is kind of, hey, you know, that old adage from business, right? You can't manage what you don't measure. And so it doesn't need to be complex lab testing. Everyone's going to all this complexity. Whereas I think there's a lot of straightforward measures and kind of straightforward self-awareness, a lot of low-hanging fruit to be had in terms of our discipline, our consistency, ways we act out, ways we don't care for ourselves. So.
Yeah, I took a break from therapy for a couple years, had twins and just life got crazy. And I just got back into it. And one thing that we've started doing is, at the start of every call or session, we'll just check in on like the pillars. Like, are you sleeping? Are you eating? You know, it's like, we're just starting there. And if that's not, you know, then we like kind of work through, okay, if we're not there, how do we get there? And then we kind of go into like the bigger stuff or something. And it's just been helpful because it's like, I feel like I have so many things that I want to work through, but sometimes it's like, okay, am I sleeping? I've never appreciated it more than I have in the last year. But, you know, when you're not sleeping, it's like the world looks so scary and just make these assumptions of someone's mad at me or I'm, and then you feel your outsized reactions. Just so much stuff is messed up from sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you're, you know, in this kind of postpartum year or two, right, where it's very like, there's a lot of hormonal changes. There's a lot of, again, like self-esteem challenges and status changes, right? There's the Instagram version of motherhood. And then there's the reality of how it changes relationships and changes professional status and changes marriages. And so I don't mean in bad ways. It just like it's change and change always requires something of us. I think you're also talking about something in therapy. I talk about this in the book. I kind of try and share in Healing the Modern Brain. There's a real functioning couch behind me. If people see, I have a TED talk where I hop on the couch, I say, this is the most like advanced brain scanner known to mankind. And I think there's something true about that, because you come in, you sit down, and if you're in with a mental health professional, there's a way of sitting with us and what people share that's just, it's a little different than any way of understanding and assessing your mental health. But I try to, in Healing the Modern Brain, take some of this basic, so what I call like modern psychology, you know, some of what you're talking about, this mix of like being in a transition in life, having biological factors, having social factors. And then first, what we call taking care of the basics. And so this notion, we call it surface to depth, where, you know, before I started really trying to understand the dynamics of like, wow, what's going on? You're really anxious today. Making sure that, you know, the basic. You know, we're not trying to understand that you're anxious when you haven't eaten, your sleep's been really off for 2 or 3 days, and you're in finals week, you know, for example. It's like, oh, okay, you know, it makes sense where some of this is coming from, and it gets into the kind of tools for management.
Yeah, I think that is so important. And I think, too, with a breakup, I think sometimes people are, I get it, people are anxious to have this all done and over with. So they try to, maybe it's jump right into dating, or they want to, you know, get to the like core thing that made the breakup happen, and they want to know the answer and work through it and move on. But
yeah, avoid that trap. The one thing trap.
Yeah.
Like, what was it? It's never one thing.
Totally.
So sometimes it feels that way, but I've seen people recover their relationships from such strange and sometimes awful places, but like, get to like a healing, beautiful place. It's really impressive. So if you're in a finding yourself like really retrospective, I think there's a little bit of that, like, what lessons can you learn? But I think there's also something that's unknowable sometimes, you know, like even when people are told like, this is the reason, they still feel like, there's a little more to it, or that can't be all of it. And then it's hard to invest so much time and energy, especially after it's more than 6 months or 9 months. And, you know, and have it not come to fruition of something. I think that also kind of speaks of a cultural flaw that we have and how we think about relationships, that they're always progressive, right? That if you have a year with somebody and it's really good and it's intense and you learn a lot and then it fizzles and you break up, that like, oh, that's a failure because it didn't like lead to this, you know, long-term monogamous, we've been together forever relationship. And I think that's quite short-sighted. I see people who, you know, get a lot from different types of relationships. So, Yeah, if you're finding yourself very retrospective, looking for that one answer, looking for that one reason, it's really just, again, it's important to note that and see that as something that's a little like what we call ruminative, right? Where you're kind of stuck in a loop and a little like obsessional, mm-hmm. like this controlling stance of like, we can know everything and control it. It's like, no, we can't. That's not true. And when we get into that stance in relationships, it's usually not super helpful. So, but yeah, those are, I don't know, a few thoughts you sparked.
Yeah, no, I mean, the obsession loop is something that, you know, I'd say most people listening to this have struggled with a breakup, and they do. They want, you know, and I get that. It's like, it feels like if you can know that one thing, then it'll feel like it's solved. But most of the time, when even if people feel like they get to it, it doesn't take all the other stuff away. So I think it's important, like you said, like keep returning back to the self-awareness thing of like, okay, here I am doing this again. This isn't going to solve everything. And just at least knowing that and being able to catch yourself, I think can be such a powerful tool. So I like that it keeps coming back to that self-awareness one.
I love that tenet a lot. It's a lot of fun. I think some of the other ones we've kind of touched on but not said, the tenet of engagement. Again, mm-hmm. you know, I find a lot of people, you know, myself included, where, you know, it can really become like work and relationship, and that's it. Got a number of patients who are in the setting right now where, and it makes everything feel fragile because like, oh, if there's a breakup or you get fired, it's like, then what? And I appreciate, you know, that's where most of our time is, but to really be mindful of being engaged in other interests, things that are personal, whether it's reading or writing or playing an instrument or traveling, where there's something that really fills you up. You know, it's kind of a fundamental piece of self-care. So I think, you know, breakups are really hard times. Like people are like, oh, come on. Like what? Now I'm going to take ukulele lessons. Yeah. It's pathetic. It's like, no, it's not. It's really, you know, this is like, if it makes you feel good and you enjoy it, it's a little challenging. Again, like ukulele will never break up with you. So
yeah, I just think all the stuff that my message for the show is when you're in that point of a breakup, when everything feels so hard, like anything that we can do to help our brain, help our mood, help this, like, why? I don't know. I just feel like you don't really have anything to lose in that sense. Like, you have nothing to lose by trying a ukulele lesson. You're like, you're not going to get back from a walk or going on a hike with a new friend and say, like, I can't believe I did that. So I think it's so important to have these kind of tools in the toolbox and just the awareness of, okay, like, yeah, I'm probably feeling drawn towards this processed food, but like, or I could choose this and like have it help my brain health, which will help me feel better. So I just think having lots of things in your arsenal is so important.
Yeah. And I think it's also, you know, you see the processed food and that's the choice you're going to make, or, you know, to recover from the breakup, you've gone on a wild road trip and you're hungry, there's a little fast food. It's, you know, it's also about just making healthier choices and the best choice you can, you know, in that moment. And so you also, Kendra, you mentioned one of the tenets that I think is also really helpful in breakups, which is grounding. And grounding is the tenet that's about our involvement and our relationship with nature and the natural world, whether those are like the house plants behind me or all of the, I don't know, I have a little greenhouse now. I used to have a farm, but all of the growing that I get a big kick out of, or whether if you're a hiker, whether it's finding some of those local parks and getting some time in some green space, or whether, you know, what I kind of make a little bit of a pitch for of big natural experiences, whether it's getting out to one of the big national parks, especially right now, and giving them a lot of support and attention, you know, whether it's planning a trip. I just got back from like the most epic nature experience I've ever had. I went, my daughter started horseback riding and I like love horses. And so I started horseback riding. We got to be pretty good horseback riders. So we went on this big like 8-day horseback riding trip. We rode like well over like 120, 150 miles on these horses. It's amazing. So like completely surreal mental space, amazing bonding, all that stuff. So again, big nature experiences are something that my wife hiked the Grand Teton here with a group of women. I mean, just wow. It was so like so great, so awesome for all the training and, you know, the feeling of accomplishment. So again, lots of ways, whether it's like there's bugs in the ground right in front of you and earthworms and birds calling and flying no matter where you are. I share in Healing the Modern Brain, probably in this book, Kendra, more than any other book. It's left me feeling good, but a little vulnerable. I write more about my own experience. I'm an Indiana farm boy at heart. I it was a New York City psychiatrist, like right in Manhattan for 20 plus years. Then I moved back in with my parents in really rural Indiana with my wife and kids, and was there during the pandemic. And now we're in pretty isolated, but interesting, really cool town in Wyoming. And so all these different settings, I hope, you know, one, give appeal to a broad audience of a lot of people see some recognition that whether you're in the city or in the country or in a cool mountain town, like mental health is a real thing. And it's got to be on our radar now. We have to do a much better job, all of us, myself included, being preventative and proactive. And we didn't get into it earlier. The number are just, you know, whether you're looking at teen depression going from was about 8% of our teens in 2004 when I started as a psychiatrist, now it's 20%. You know, one in five teens have clinical depression any given year. So, you know, it's just more that we have to do to take care of our mental health. And I, you know, and a breakup is a great example where you see a real kind of vulnerability. And if you haven't built a lot of mental fitness, it's where you feel it, right? Where those first 6 months are tough, where you're more isolated. You don't have maybe as much movement or as much good nutrition in your life. You know, you're not getting out into nature. You're not wanting to connect. And so the more that we can, again, have lives where these things are built in so we can handle those bumps, you know, no matter what gets thrown at us.
Yeah. And I think, too, just all the stuff that people are doing now during a breakup, like it's not just something that will serve you over the next year. It's something that you can come back to if it's a job loss or just any kind of hard things in life, like going through something as difficult as a breakup and building this mental fitness, it does pay off. And I do want to add one more pitch for the big nature experiences. I have gone backpacking a few times up in the Sierras, and there's just something about seeing how grand nature is that just makes you feel so small, but not in like a sad way, and just a like, oh my gosh, I'm just this small thing in this like huge world. I don't know. It's very like puts things into perspective pretty instantly. So I
Yeah, well, I really like that. You're also speaking to a nice part of it where I think often in a breakup or in a depressed state, right, we can feel very alone, very small in the world. There's a way somehow in the natural world, there's a little bit more awe with it. You know, when you're kind of, when you look at the mountaintop and you think, which happens to me sometimes, like I can climb to the top of that. That's not so far away. And then, oh, like 3 hours in, you're like, oh my gosh, this is impossible, right? It just gives you, you know, you're small, but you're exhausted and you're kind of in awe of the mountain. Or when I get sometimes to these places where the mountain and the water meet, it, you know, it's just, I don't know. I think it does something for all of us. So I really like that note. I think if you're having that lonely feeling, right, working on a sense of being connected. If you think about it, in some ways, the end result of a lot of psychedelic medicine is people feeling more connected. And you know, that all that research is really interesting. And sometimes I think it's not a little too negative about it, but trying to invoke more of that for ourselves, you know, being there and really feeling connected to this web of life is a nice meditation, again, to at least try, right? Because whether you're in a relationship or not, you serve a place in this natural world somehow. I think the nature is really great. I love you mentioning the backpacking. I love backpacking because I love how almost like surreal and wild it is these days to be like sleeping in a tent
and not having not having phone service and like following like a paper map and getting lost. And yeah, it is. It's like you feel like you pop back into the world and you're like, I just left the map for 4 days.
Yeah, and that's that kind of, again, that modern brain question. Like, why the modern brain, do you ask? It's like, I don't know. Isn't it wild that you get back into this thing and you're like, oh, right, the real world where we go camping and like and interact with nature. And I think it's just important to keep track of how that, again, is getting eroded for so many people.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing so much. Your book will be out today as this episode comes out. So I encourage everyone to get a copy and really use it to like build your toolbox of things that you can start doing to start improving your mental fitness.
Well, I hope so. I hope it'll help everybody. Thank you so much. It's just exciting to be here with you on publication day of all days. And it's really meaningful to share this book with everybody. My hope is that just this podcast and thinking about the tenets helps you recover and feel better and build more self-esteem. I hope everybody will check out the book. There's also an e-course, Healing the Modern Brain. It's all up on my site, drewramseymd.com. And then I'm super active on Instagram for anybody who's on social. But yeah, Kendra, thanks so much. It's really fun for me. I meet so many people and I love talking about relationships and dating. I'm a psychotherapist at heart. And so it's really fun to talk with you and your community. And I really appreciate an opportunity for everybody to just think about their mental fitness. And, you know, again, like you said, Kendra, I don't want it to be like, oh, it's like 9 things every day and it's all overwhelming. It's like, no, it's like simple. It's like, hey, you go out in a sunbeam and it feels good. Like, pat on the back, your little tenet of grounding there in that moment. Or, you know, you pick an avocado tonight, or, you know, have a little extra protein tomorrow morning, just, you know, in effort to feed your brain more B vitamins and more protein. You know, again, good. Like all those little things are points on the board and they help us have a win for our mental health.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And I know people listening to it doesn't have to be too crazy. And well, I'll put your website in the show notes below. And yeah, everyone go out and get Healing the Modern Brain. And thank you so much, Drew, again, for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Kendra. Let's talk again.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you loved it, I hope you'll leave a review and share with your friends. If you're not already following me on Instagram, head to @yourbreakupbestie, where I'm sharing new content almost every day. To join our Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with thousands of people from all over the world going through breakups, head to the link in the show notes. And don't forget to check out my online courses for more in-depth help through your healing journey. I always end these episodes the same way, reminding you to be nice to yourself, stay connected with loved ones, and the biggest reminder is that this too shall pass. I promise.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.